is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasir Rafi'i. Please stay tuned. Sometimes our dear brothers and sisters come to us and ask why our prayers are not answered. The answer to the question is in Ayah 11 of Surah Al-Isra, which states, "Man prays for ill as avidly as he prays for good, and man is over hasty." The main theme of this ayah is that sometimes the human beings hasten in order to get the answer to their supplications. However, they don't know that they must not hasten to get the answer to their prayers and that they must be more patient. This haste of them will give them ill instead of good. Maybe the answer to their request is not given soon, but there is goodness in that answer for them later. Therefore, we must not hasten in getting the answers to our prayers and requests from Allah, and we must be more patient so that our prayers are answered on the right place and right time. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech on IRIB English Radio, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program and our other programs, please visit our website at iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
It's too late. If you haven't spoken up yet, it might be too late for you. This is your call to say something and not let history judge you for what you should have done.
There once was a day when we were shadows in the street, paper-thin excuses crumbling at our feet. Screens glowed brightly, selling fear and doubt. The truth bled quietly, seldom spoken out. But today it's on the news again that the Zionist entity has murdered Palestinians and burned their city. Savagery is in their blood, genocide their game. The world is watching live as they enter the hall of shame.
they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late. America gives the go-ahead, then it sends in bombs. Israel calls it self-defense and murders without qualms. Since when has killing children become a source of pride? Silence must be broken if you want to turn the tide. It's time we made the right choice. Our lives may be on the line. It's time we raised our voice, chanting free, free Palestine. The police can do what they want to do, detain one or two. The thousands of millions are coming through, a move they cannot undo. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too
good day to all of our listeners from around the world. This is Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. We start off this hour's program with Round the World with reporters. Listen to fascinating reports from all over the globe as reporters tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. They will be followed by Minbar. The program covers speeches on various subjects by very well-known Islamic scholars and orators. And our final program this hour is The Lantern. The program explains moral teachings from an Islamic perspective through telling of fables and stories rich in morals. Stay with us for this hour.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
In the midst of hunger, shelling, and displacement, many in the Sudanese capital Khartoum still find time to follow the world beyond Tehran's resoluteness against Israel in a region where others have chosen silence or normalization with the oppressive regime is sparking something deeper here in Sudan. It's personal. This is the same city where after the 1967 Arab-Israeli war, leaders gathered and declared the three no's, no peace, no recognition, and no negotiations with Israel. That legacy still lingers in the hearts of many Sudanese, not just as a political stance, but as a matter of principle and pride. Despite the struggle for daily survival, from finding food to fleeing violence, Sudanese civilians remain emotionally engaged in what they see as a larger fight for justice, the cause of Palestine still holds symbolic weight, and Iran's bold posture doesn't go unnoticed. Just as Israel is seen as an occupying force in Palestine, the RSF is seen here as an internal invader, a militia turning cities into battlefields. For people caught between rappel and ration lines, resistance anywhere feels like something worth noticing.
We followed closely the missiles Iran launched at Israel to defend itself, which is a legitimate right. Israel is supported by countries like the U.S. and European countries.
We followed the Israeli attacks on Iran, a sovereign and respected country. This aggressive regime has oppressed the Islamic nation and the Palestinian people. I pray that Allah grants victory to both Iran and the Islamic nations.
Even in a city scarred by war, the echoes of international struggle still reach deeply. Iran's actions remind many Sudanese that silence isn't the only option. Dignity, even under siege, can still speak and be heard. Here in Khartoum, the war is local, but the struggle feels global. As Iran stands its ground and asserts its influence, many Sudanese see a mirror of their own fight, a people refusing to accept silence or submission. Abdullah Hussein, Khartoum.
Foreign journalists walking through the ruins of residential neighborhoods, witnessing the human cost of war firsthand. Each destroyed home telling a story. Personal belongings buried beneath the rubble, lives forever changed, and families left shattered in the wake of Israeli missile strikes. One of the hardest hit areas on June 15th was Tehran's Tajrish Square, normally a busy shopping hub.
The innocent blood that was shed will never be forgotten. We will never forgive or forget these atrocities.
Traffic CCTV footage released a week later captured two powerful explosions. The first struck the upper floors of a building. The second hit the street, rupturing a main water pipeline and sending debris flying across the square. Vehicles hurled into the air. The blast left behind scenes of chaos. At least 12 civilians killed and more than 50 injured. Amid the devastation, residents rushed to help one another, pulling the wounded to safety from the flooded, debris-strewn streets.
We had to act quickly to minimize the damage. After the explosions, the street was left with a massive crater and severe flooding.
Local residents and shopkeepers recounting the harrowing moments, the deafening sound of the blast, the frantic rush to find shelter, and the heartbreak of returning to shattered homes, destroyed storefronts, and neighbors who never made it back.
We invited you here to witness the scale of destruction caused by the Israeli regime, so you can be a voice for the war crimes committed against the Iranian people. No awakened soul or conscience can accept this level of disregard for human rights.
The tour then moves to Tehran's Narmak neighborhood, where a university professor, labeled by the enemy as a nuclear scientist, was targeted in his own home. The attack claimed the lives of the professor's entire family and several neighbors. Now the residence lies in ruins, reduced to rubble. And what remains is a sobering scene, a stark reminder of the human cost behind what Israel describes as targeted assassinations.
It's very disturbing to see all these belongings to the children, like the school books, the place they have, and to see like they are completely innocent and why they got killed. I mean, even the scientist also, he was not working on any atomic bomb. He was working on civilian nuclear facilities. So this is against the Convention of Geneva to attack civilians.
Through every stop, foreign journalists hear firsthand the voices of survivors, and they view evidence that directly contradicts Israeli claims of avoiding civilian targets. Visiting more bombed homes, the foreign journalists witness the true human toll of the Israeli aggression, the devastating reality of the suffering of civilians. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Mm-hmm.
More than 170 civil society organizations joined a massive pro-Palestinian rally in Dublin on Saturday. Protesters strongly condemned the Israeli regime and its Western backers, accusing them of enabling genocide in Gaza.
They're attacking with high-precision military equipment that they're getting from the United States, and what's now being accepted as just normal international behavior means that we have people who are being dehumanized and demonized if they try to defend themselves.
Campaigners are calling for immediate sanctions on Tel Aviv and a total ban on the use of Irish airspace for the transfer of lethal weapons to Israel.
International law is there for a reason. So Israel needs to adhere to international law. That's all we're asking for. Please adhere to international law. And if everyone done that, we wouldn't have ended up here in the first place.
Official figures indicate that nearly 59,000 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have been killed by Israeli forces since October 2023. The real death toll is likely far higher. Meanwhile, famine is now imminent. The long-anticipated Occupied Territories Bill is expected to be introduced in Ireland this September. If passed, the legislation would ban trade with companies operating in illegal Israeli settlements.
In recent days, high-profile political figures in the United States have been mounting pressure on the Irish government to scrap the bill, threatening negative economic consequences if it goes ahead. But these activists are demanding that political leaders here do not capitulate to that pressure. Jerome Hughes, Dublin.
The echoes of the Iran-Iraq war still speak through walls. At Tehran's Holy Defense Museum, a delegation of foreign journalists walks through the scenes of sacrifice, endurance, and defiance, an immersive journey into the eight-year imposed war, where a nation bled but never broke.
Quite striking what they did, tried to capture the atmosphere of how it was, and also to show it to other people who didn't went through the war, who didn't live through the war, and don't have actual account of it. So it's pretty amazing what they've done.
The Holy Defense Museum in Tehran stands as both a memorial and a mirror of Iran's resilience.
The first impression upon entering this museum is a deep sense of the Iranian people's extraordinary resilience and unwavering determination. Despite enduring severe hardships during the eight-year war, when virtually the entire world stood against Iran, they persevered. Even in the challenging years following the revolution, Iran managed to overcome immense obstacles, ultimately emerging victorious and displaying remarkable strength.
From reconstructed front lines to artifacts of fallen soldiers, the museum offers more than history. It conveys a message that victory comes not just through arms, but through faith and national unity. The journalists listening closely as the guides explain how the Iranian people, civilians and soldiers alike, stood shoulder to shoulder to defend their homeland. The experience led the visiting journalists to draw powerful parallels between Iran's wartime past and its present-day resistance to foreign aggression.
Things like peace through strength and, you know, peace through war, all this just nonsense. It's nonsense. And what I'm taking from this museum is Iran never sought out war or aggression upon anyone. And all of the war, the imposed wars upon Iran, they never sought that out. It was imposed upon them by imperial powers.
As far as these foreign journalists are concerned, the museum underscores how, for Iranians, defending the homeland is deeply rooted in their faith, culture, and collective identity.
Here, the visiting journalists see not only the scars of war, but the unity, resilience, and overwhelming faith that has led to the victory of the Iranian nation. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Italy's former Prime Minister and opposition five-star movement leader Giuseppe Conte has accused Giorgia Meloni's far-right government of violating international norms by maintaining military ties with the Israeli regime.
Si chiama
genocidio.
What is happening in Gaza goes under the name of genocide. The genocidal intent is evident. Italy's government has made a mockery of the country by not requesting any sanctions against Israel. We expected you to at least tear up this memorandum, as Italy's military ties effectively support violations of human rights and international norms. How do you intend to continue importing weapons from Israel? This is an act that makes you complicit in the violation of international law.
Conte's remarks came after Italy's Chamber of Deputies rejected a motion by opposition parties Five Star Movement, the Democratic Party, Greens and Left Alliance and Italian Socialist Party to suspend a 25-year-old Italy-Israel Memorandum of Understanding by 142 votes to 102. The memorandum revolves around Rome and Tel Aviv cooperation in the military sector. On June 8, while the Israeli regime's genocide in Gaza continued to escalate, Italy's government renewed its military cooperation agreement with Tel Aviv. This memorandum of understanding, in place since 2005, is automatically renewed every 5 years, unless one of the two parties explicitly decides to suspend or terminate it. In late May, in response to the regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza, the regional governments of Puglia and Emilia-Romagna formally severed all institutional ties with the Israeli regime. Italy's national government has not even been able to speak a word of solidarity for the thousands of civilian Gazans slaughtered by war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu.
C'è una sudditanza che giustifica.
Italy is utterly subjugated to Israel. We keep supplying Tel Aviv with military materials, including ammonium nitrate and tritium, and importing weapons from Israel. The amount of arms we imported tripled in 2024 compared to the year before.
Our motion was a strong message given by all opposition forces in the face of Netanyahu's brutal attacks that continue to kill Gazans and hitting even a Catholic church in the strip. Our government must condemn once and for all Israelis' extermination of Palestinians.
Italy is the third Israeli regime's arms supplier following the US and Germany. Max Civili, Rome.
Dozens gathered on Khalid bin al-Walid Street in Damascus, rejecting Israeli aggression and expressing firm support for Syria's unity. The strikes, which hit near residential areas, were seen as a provocation aimed at deepening internal strife. Protesters raised Syrian flags and voiced rejection of sectarianism, foreign plots, and war. Many see the airstrikes as part of a wider plan to reignite conflict and shatter the country's fragile recovery. Chants echoed through the streets. No to treason, no to foreign intervention. Protesters called for civil peace and solidarity with Soweda, vowing to defend every inch of Syrian territory against division and outside manipulation. From Damascus to Soweda, Syrians are speaking in one voice. No to war, no to division. As Israeli airstrikes try to fracture the country, citizens respond with defiance and unity stronger than ever. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
His name may not have made headlines, but to those who knew him, Hajj Ramazan was a legend. Now, in the wake of his martyrdom, an entire nation commemorates the life and sacrifice of Major General Mohammad Said Izadi, known by friends and peers as Hajj Ramazan.
He dedicated over 35 years of his life to the Palestinian resistance. He was a key figure in supporting Palestine as he was head of the division in charge. His unwavering commitment shaped the resistance movement and earned him respect for his dedication to the Palestinian cause.
A key force behind Iran's support for Palestine, he was revered for his humility. His martyrdom in the recent Israeli aggression has drawn widespread condemnation and renewed vows to carry forward his mission. A special tribute video played during the memorial left many in attendance deeply moved, as they admitted they had never realized just how instrumental Hajj Ramazan was in support for the Palestinian resistance.
Those who support Israel are stabbing Palestine in the back,
and those who martyr the supporters of the resistance are betraying Palestine. What this revered martyr left behind is a legacy of resistance. We must keep his memory alive by continuing his path in the fight against oppression. What better honor than to sacrifice for this valuable cause?
This memorial affirms a collective vow to preserve the memory of martyr Hajj Ramazan and continue his unwavering support for the resistance, echoing across generations and all who stand for justice.
Honoring this revered martyr, his steadfast commitment to defending and supporting Palestine inspires continued resistance. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of RIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Amin Rastani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That last inspiration that we want to take, inshallah, from the day of Ashura, I felt would be good to be that of death itself, and that everything is going to end, brothers and sisters. I want to share with you some hadiths, inshallah, as much as I can today. As many hadiths as I can that speak of this the importance of this death. Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, he says, "Dhikru al-maut yumitu al-shahawat fi al-nafs." This is why it's important. Remembrance of death, he says, takes the life of, destroys, kills, the shahawat that we have in us, those carnal desires that we have in us. You see, if I'm going to be here forever, then I have an inclination towards here. And the desires I may have are desires that I will try my best to satisfy in any way possible, if it's halal or haram. Yeah? The only way these pleasures will slowly lose meaning and color to me is how? Is if I remember that they're going to end. The only thing that reminds me that they're going to end is death. So the Imam, he says, "Yumitu shahawat fin nafs." And that's why we have a famous hadith by the Holy Prophet that he refers to as death as hadimul ladhat. Hadim comes from destroyer. Destroyer of pleasures, it's called death. وَيَقْطَعُ مَنَابِتَ الْغَفْلَ. It says, remembrance of death destroys the roots of heedlessness and forgetfulness. If you were to think about anything else, talk about anything else, go anywhere else, it wouldn't have the power of killing the shahawat in you like death does. Now, of course, when it says shahawat here, those haram pleasures that we seek. If it's halal, Allah's allowed it, it's not a bad thing. يُرِقُّ الطَّابْعَ يَكْسُرْ or يَرُقُّ الطَّابْعَ وَيَكْسِرُ أَعْلَامَ الْهَوَى. It softens one's nature. يَرِقُّ probably comes from رَقِيق and رِقَّة, which means when something is soft, it softens one's nature. Like you cool down a little bit. All this pushing and obsession towards dunya, you kind of loosen up when it comes to that. It's a relaxer, or whatever those pills are that you take that relaxes your body. يُطْفِئُ نَارَ الْحِرْسِ. It extinguishes the fire of obsession. وَيُحَقِّرْ الدُّنْيَا. And it belittles the dunya. Younger people, younger guys, sisters, right? We don't expect this. Islam doesn't expect this from you right away. You don't need to go home now and say, oh, okay, you know, let me destroy all pleasures in life in my eyes. No, right? And even if I wasn't going to say this, I don't think you would have done that anyway. So just remember this. Let these things echo in your mind. And please, as the years pass, as you grow, mature with the passing of these years. Don't let this secular environment we're in. And by the way, when I say secular environment, I don't mean America. Secularism has taken over everything. Muslim lands are secularized to an extent now. It doesn't matter where you are anymore. It's all a little village. Okay? All these values and stuff that the West has, used to have, now it's the values of everywhere, unfortunately. You know what it's like? This example came to my mind. It's like when you love somebody, right? And you're after them, and maybe she likes me, maybe he likes me, maybe he doesn't. Oh, look what he said in this WhatsApp message in the group. Maybe he cares, maybe he doesn't, maybe he's... All of a sudden you find out that person you were so into is into somebody else. What happens? Once you find out that they themselves, their heart is somewhere else, that's enough to kind of destroy that love you might have had. Unless you're super obsessed, but even then, you're disappointed and you're upset. Guys, the dunya is not in love with us. just letting us know. The dunya is not in love with us. It doesn't care about us. All we do is we accumulate, 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 and we leave it for those to come after us, and we go. I'm like, dunya, I did so much for you. Now the time has come for me to benefit. It's time to go. You can't take any benefit in what you had. Right? And so when it comes to accumulation of wealth, unless I am trying to accumulate a lot so that I can support others, support the community, other than that, I don't see a reason to kill myself for that. Anything we go into, going too far with it. I'll use this example. The bodybuilders, bodybuilding, being in shape, okay, fine. But bodybuilding as if that is the goal in life, where I just put as much flesh as I can on me. Why? So it becomes the food of the insects and animals on the ground later? I don't want to feed, that's not my job to feed those things. Anything, if we take it too much, it has to make sense, brothers and sisters. It has to make sense in the equation in which Akhirah also lies. If you take Akhirah out of the equation, a lot of things are going to make sense. All right? A lot of things are going to make sense. All the isms out there are going to make sense. But if we bring Akhirah into the picture, a lot of things go out of the window. I'm sorry. They just don't make sense anymore. That I'm going to kill myself. Unless that's my way of life, that's my livelihood, it's a different story. But some people, you find that they have passion in certain things only to serve others in the end. So that's what I'm trying to say. Either you're going to be feeding the insects, you're going to be leaving wealth for five generations down. You're not responsible for five generations down of your descendants. We're not. We actually have literature for these things. And so, if you're younger, brothers and sisters, keep this in mind. It's like the dunya just doesn't care about us, and then we care so much about it. And so we'll do everything for it. Baba, understand, this guy, the dunya, his heart is somewhere else. His heart's not with us. The second or the sixth imam, he says, إِذَا أَنْتَ حَمَلْتَ جَنَازَةً فَكُنْ كَأَنَّكَ أَنْتَ الْمَحْمُولِ. Remembrance of death and the importance of it and the reasons for it. He says, whenever you are carrying a janaza, what you should do is, you should imagine that that is you being carried. What are you going to do? And then come back to reality and say, okay, alhamdulillah, that's not me. So what am I going to do for that day? Put yourself in that person's shoes that's being carried.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahim Kareem Adi Alim Halim Hakim Mateen Ghafur Shakur Wadud Qayyim.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
In the name of Allah, Salam. So welcome, this is another episode of Lantern. So we have a new story and a lot to hear about that and of course learn about that. On the continuation of this program Lantern, we have a new story to listen to. The title of our story is Tyrant Needs No Excuse. A fox was drinking water from a stream on a mountaintop when he noticed that downstream in a valley, a young lamb was drinking from the same stream. The fox trotted down the stream and came up to the lamb. The fox sought an excuse to seize the lamb and said, "You're drinking from my stream. You're polluting the water that I drink. How can I pollute the water for you, oh fox?" protested the lamb. "I am down in the valley and you drink upstream in the mountains." The fox was taken aback because the lamb was telling the truth. He needed a different excuse to pounce on the lamb. 3 months ago, I was sound asleep under a tree. You made so much noise with your baa that it woke me up and you ruined my day," said the fox. "How could I wake you up 3 months ago when I'm only 2 months old?" answered the little lamb. Now the fox was at a loss. Logic was not on his side. He needed some other alibi to complete his sly plan. "It must have been your uncle who was shouting baa and kept me awake." So saying, the fox pounced on the little lamb, caught him in his powerful jaw, and dragged him into the bush. A tyrant needs no excuse for his tyranny.
Refuge from Satan the cursed, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Lantern from iRibe English Radio. This is Zainab Musavi, and what we do in this program is to listen to certain religious stories and then try to shed light and talk about some of the religious points and lessons that we can take out of them. Well, today we intend to talk about the ruling and governing a society with tyranny. You know, in the rich tradition of Islamic thought, the concept of leadership and justice holds paramount importance. You know, the divine guidance emphasizes justice and righteousness and compassion as fundamental qualities of a legitimate ruler. Conversely, tyranny and oppression and injustice and the unlawful usurpation of authority is vehemently condemned, and they are regarded as a grave deviation from the divine path. The Islamic perspective considers tyranny as a manifestation of moral decay that invites divine punishment. And again, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala states in his book and says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وَلَا تُصَعِّرْ خَدَّكَ لِلنَّاسِ وَلَا تَمْشِ فِي الْأَرْضِ مَرَحًا إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُحِبُّ كُلَّ مُخْتَالٍ فَخُورٍ. And do not turn your face away from people in arrogance, nor walk in pride on the earth. Indeed, Allah does not like the arrogant and boastful. Surah Al-Luqman, verse number 18. The whole book of Quran warns against oppressing others and commands rulers to govern fairly. Tyranny, which involves unjustly seizing their rights and oppresses their weak and disregards the divine commandments, it directly contravenes the divine principles of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam warned constantly against unjust rulers. He said, The most severe punishment from Allah is upon a ruler who oppresses his subjects. The oppressive rule fosters corruption, you know, he fuels conflict, and he ultimately destabilizes the society and leads into chaos and divine retribution. Resisting tyranny is not just a moral obligation, but it is a religious duty. The early Islamic history reflects this, with figures such as Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, who stood against the tyrannical Umayyad regime. His martyrdom at Karbala symbolizes the eternal struggle against the unjust rule and the importance of upholding justice, even at the cost of life. Okay, let's go for a short break and we will be back very soon.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspect of our life.
Welcome back to your audience. Imam Ali's leadership also itself was a testament to resist against tyranny. His refusal to accept illegitimate authority and his efforts to establish justice, they all exemplify the core Islamic principles that rulers must govern with justice and not tyranny. And the divine justice system in Islam ensures that tyrannical rulers face consequences, whether in this world or in the hereafter. And the Holy Book of Quran describes the fate of the oppressive rulers in that way. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. وجعلنا منهم أئمة يهدون بأمرنا لما صبروا وكانوا بآياتنا يوقنون. And we made them leaders guiding by our command when they were patient and when they were certain of our signs. Surah Al-Sajda, verse number 24. You see, this verse serves as a reminder that tyranny is a temporary state and divine justice will prevail. We should know that the oppressed will be resorted and the oppressors will be held accountable. And in general, to summarize what we said, ruling with tyranny is an egregious deviation from divine guidance and Islamic principles. Imam Ali's statement that a government will stay with heresy but not with tyranny underscores this nature of heresy. And it also gives hints to the destructive permanence of tyranny. The teachings of the Holy Book of Quran and the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam also reinforce that justice, compassion, adherence to divine law are foundations of legitimate leadership, and tyranny corrupts societal morals and it invites the divine punishment and undermines the very fabric of Islamic society. Okay, well, dear listeners, that was the time we had for this episode of Lantern. I really hope that you have enjoyed listening to us. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Children know what's love and peace.
Good day to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholar Ibn al-Haytham, known as Al-Hazen in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. We'll listen to the continuation of Iran Radio. Thank you for joining us. We start this hour's programs with our news bulletin. They will be followed by Islamic upbringing. The program aims to answer frequently asked questions regarding children and adolescents and their upbringing, of course. Our varied radio productions feature is our final program this hour.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran has reiterated the European Union and European Troika no legal ground to trigger a snapback mechanism of the JCPOA, that's a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Dozens of Palestinians have been killed in fresh Israeli attacks on Gaza since dawn Tuesday. And Yemen carries out yet another anti-Israel operation targeting Ben Gurion Airport with a hypersonic ballistic missile. Hello, everyone, and welcome to World News. Our top story, Iran has reiterated the European Union and European Troika no legal ground to trigger a snapback mechanism of the JCPOA, that's a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Now, Deputy Foreign Minister Kazem Gharibabadi said the activation of such a mechanism is illegal, adding the JCPOA is not in effect currently, adding the European parties to the deal did not remain committed to it after U.S. withdrawal. Gharibabadi noted the Western parties to the JCPOA thus cannot blame Iran for failing to abide by the JCPOA commitments when they themselves have failed to do so. The Deputy Foreign Minister said the Iranian delegation will assert its position firmly during the upcoming meeting with representatives from the UK, France, and Germany on Friday in Turkey's Istanbul. Talks in the Turkish city are set to revolve around Tehran's nuclear program. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign minister says the country has no plan to abandon its nuclear program, including uranium enrichment, despite recent military aggression by the U.S. and regional proxy, Israel.
We cannot give up our enrichment because it is an achievement of our own scientists. And now, more than that, it is a question of national pride.
Abbas Araghchi made the remarks in an interview with Fox News. Regarding negotiations with the U.S., Araghchi said Tehran is open to talks but has no plan for direct negotiations for the time being. He noted if Washington is coming for a win-win solution, that Tehran is ready to engage. The top diplomat noted that Iran, though, is ready to do any confidence-building measure needed to prove that its nuclear program is, in fact, peaceful in exchange for lifting of U.S. sanctions. Araghchi, however, stressed any future nuclear deal, though, should contain the right to enrichment. As part of ongoing memorials held across the country for Iranians who were martyred in recent Israeli aggression, a ceremony has been held in Tehran to honor the great sacrifices made by those lost in Iran's northern province of Gilan. Our correspondent, Mariam Azadeh, has your story.
A surprise appearance that underscores the significance of the ceremony. President Masoud Pezeshkian arrived unannounced to pay his respects at the solemn ceremony in Tehran to honor the martyrs of Iran's northern Gilan province. Those who, while their country was under attack, made the honorable choice to risk their lives in its defense.
My son was almost 31 years old and was fighting on the front lines. He was on leave with his family when he was called in at 3 a.m. He then left his wife and kids in his father-in-law's care. Mohammad Reza has an 8-year-old daughter and a 2-month-old baby girl whom he didn't even get to kiss goodbye. He defended the country for a few days and was then martyred.
In Iran, the spirit of sacrifice extends far beyond the battlefield. Over the past 2 decades, more than 20 pioneering Iranian scientists have been assassinated in attacks by the Israeli regime. Among the most recent, Mohammad Reza Sadiqi Saber martyred alongside 11 family members in a targeted strike. Yet, though giving up one's life is the ultimate sacrifice, outliving one's loved ones is a sacrifice of its own, especially for those who have kids to raise.
Misak is only 9 and he was so close to his big brother. We haven't talked about it much yet, but he knows that his brother is with God now.
My husband loved us so much and he often told us that. He also often tried to talk to us and prepare us for his martyrdom. The day before he was martyred, he told me over the phone about the importance of living a martyr's life. I have nothing more to say other than we're ready to give our lives for our leader, and I hope that my children will follow in my husband's path.
These sacrifices are deeply appreciated by Iran's leader, officials, and the nation as a whole. Yet the families say the only reward they seek is the honor of martyrdom for the greater good, for national sovereignty, and for territorial integrity for Iran.
The sacrifices were great and the burden of loss as heavy as can be, but the mourning families maintain that they're proud of their martyrs and are ready to make even greater sacrifices, because to them the protection of their country and its values is far more important